joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Steve Oob with Architects Southwest, here to talk about a master plan. You've been here before to talk about the Lafayette Comprehensive Plan, but today you're here to talk about the master plan that will guide the University of Louisiana at Lafayette into the future. We spoke with Tom Sammons last week, who is now the new director of the UL School of Architecture and Design, more specifically about some of the projects that he's been involved with, and in particular, the bike paths and bike lanes that are very much a part of this master plan, but of course will affect lots of people. And it was a very exciting talk because it really shows how the vision that you all have in a very specific way. So I wanted to have you here today to talk a bit about the history of the university's development and how the master plan came about as it is today. So maybe give us a sense about UL's history, and I'm sure you're well-versed in it after you've been a part of this master plan. Kind of remind us of some of the stages that have happened in this, you know, over 100-year-old plan.
Well, certainly, Judith. Thank you so much for having me, first off. You know, Dr. Savoy contacted us almost 3 years ago now to discuss the whole notion of developing a comprehensive plan. Initially, the discussion was centered around creating a plan for the academic campus. But as we all know, the university was in the throes of negotiating with Our Lady of Lourdes to potentially acquire that property. And we began to discuss not only the academic campus, but the impact that Lourdes may have on the greater whole, including the University Common, which is the property to the north where the athletic complex is and the research park currently inhabits. So the conversation quickly led to comprehensive planning regarding the entirety of the university land holdings. At the beginning, the goal was to simply create a visual plan to show how we would take up space over the next 20 years. It very quickly mushroomed into discussions about sustainability, and I can recall Dr. Savoy very clearly telling me, I want to take all the parking off the perimeter of the campus. And I'm waiting for the tongue-in-cheek laugh, and that never happened, and it only got more intense from there. And his belief is, if we're going to teach environmental sustainability, then we need to practice it. And so the plan began with that vision. It started off with a hope to get some base information that would help us to inform the plan. And we started off with having university space needs analyses done, and expanded from there to include a market assessment of what potential activity could occur if we developed the research park in a different way than maybe others had thought it would be developed. Those studies came back with just a wealth of information. And we took that information and created essentially a working database. We opened, it was almost a year ago, a little over a year ago now, with our first charrette. It was in May of 2012, held at the Alumni Center with the deans of all the schools. And the goal was to kind of get their sense of where they felt their programs were going and where the university would be going in the next 15 to 20 years. We expanded that initial engagement with the faculty and some of the students, and culminated in a 10-day charrette, which included students, faculty, and the entire community. So it was very interesting. Dynamic, if you will.
And as I recall, there was a lot of enthusiasm,
there
too.
There is still.
Yes, there is. But they were so excited about being asked about it and to share their visions.
And the participation was great. Mm-hmm. It informed tremendously what we did. As a matter of fact, Tom spoke last week about the bicycle ways, and that was a big initiative the students had put forth and backed it up with their own finances. So it's been really a great exercise, and we're moving forward now. That's, you know, the good news is the plan has been adopted by the University Planning Committee, by the Louisiana system, by the deans and the academics, and we're now moving forward to make it a reality.
Well, let's talk about this plan, and I have to say it's really interesting, and it was talking with Tom the architecture department and your firm, Architect Southwest, doesn't seem to deal with just architecture anymore. And I found that so fascinating that really they're teaching their students and you're so involved with something that is much more comprehensive, yeah. not just buildings, not just structures, but how everything fits together and how it impacts lives yeah. and not just a place to stay or work.
You know, that's an interesting observation. When I was in school here, it was instilled into us then that, you know, architecture is not about the building. It's about the landscape. It's about how the building fits in the places that we build, the context. For me, the building itself it kind of evolves from the ground. You know, how does the sun affect it? How do the winds affect it? And when you begin thinking about place, the scale is the only difference. When we design a building, it may be 20,000 square feet, but it's about rooms. It's about engagement. When you design a place, it's the same thing. It's just a little bit bigger scale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, it's interesting that the profession of architecture has always really been not only about the building but about the entire context of whatever it is you're working in. So it isn't that big of a stretch to, mm-hmm. to go the extra mile here.
Well, let's talk about some of these components in the master plan. Describe first the core, the historical core that you're working with mm-hmm. for this master plan.
You know, it's interesting. When we started the project, we had taken slides of the existing historic campus, and we had asked – we do a visual preference survey of – people who participate, and we ask generally, can you tell me where in the region the area excites you? What in South Louisiana really gets you excited? And inevitably, people would talk about the historic quad, you know, the area bounded by St. Mary Johnston University in Hebron. And so we began to assess that area, and it was planned back in 1898. Mm-hmm. There was a plan actually conceived in 1920, and it's built out that way. And we have now slides showing that old campus where the oak trees look like little azalea bushes, and today they're, you know, 100-year-old majestic plant material that forms the core of this campus. So very quickly we realized that if we're going to create place – we need to be thinking about what it's going to look like 100 years from now and begin celebrating that vision. Now, you can create great visuals, but in order to make it a reality, we've learned that you have to create a governance that mandates that that happen. And we've done that. And so the plan from the beginning, the core was the model. We extracted the essence of the core, and what it was a beautifully landscaped environment. Buildings that were contextual to South Louisiana. Matter of fact, we came up with an architectural vernacular called Creole Georgian Gothic.
Have you patented that?
we realized, too, that at the time, these buildings were very environmentally sensitive. They were designed with the climate in mind. Cross ventilation was important. Covered walkways were human. It protected students from the heat, the rain. And, you know, after 1932, we kind of forgot about those things because air conditioning came along and it really made things different. And so our goal now was to go back into the historic values and understand that we needed to still protect the pedestrians. We still needed to create buildings that had a South Louisiana context. And so consequently, we coded those things to occur, and now they're a new law. You have no option. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, you know, when you say back to 1932 with air conditioning, there's also an interesting discussion of it, I think, in your master plan about what happened with World War II and afterwards and some yeah. of the building and, of course, so much energy that was occurring in the country at that point.
Right.
But that affected, rather than having a consistent, cohesive plan, a lot had to do with just expediency and quickness and things going up
yeah.
very fast.
Yeah, and it's been exacerbated over the course of the last 50 years. We've really lost the art of creating place, and it's driven by the perception that, you know, the automobile was, you know, what was going to control our lives, and it has. And so what has resulted is that places – and, you know, one of the things we did during the master planning charrettes, we would ask the students, if I gave you $1 million and said you can spend it anywhere you want, I'm going to forecast that you will all spend it on making your lives more convenient by making parking a more attainable thing for you. And everyone laughed about it, you know, when I said it. And in the end, most of the decisions we made came back to some impact of the car. We actually allowed the students to dream a little while, and I said, look, I want to know from your experiences, what has been the worst experience on campus you've ever had? And inevitably, everyone said having to ride the bus from Cajun Field to the campus. And I said, well, then let's fix it. How can we fix it? I said, you know, let me throw some ideas out. How about I say you can't have a car? That was unacceptable. I said, okay, well, then how about I say that we remove all of the trees on campus and we create this big parking lot where it's very convenient for you, and that was unacceptable. I said, well, then where's the middle ground? And so the middle ground ended up becoming something of an interesting debate about whether or not we would expend funds to build parking garages nearer to campus to give them independence but convenience, yet still retain the environmental side of the historic campus, or if I would create a better busing system. And we went through a number of these discussions. In the end, I think the students felt that it was important to have convenience, but at the same time keep the beauty of the campus and create that historic value that had really define the campus for all generations since the 20s.
Well, because that is the part that, as you said, people are so much more attracted to is that central core that President Stevens began planning. Yeah. And of course, he didn't have to worry about the automobile quite as much.
That's right.
but definitely a plan in that sense of cohesiveness and respect and responsiveness to the environment. He would find your conversations very comfortable, I'm sure.
Yeah, as I would find his, I'm sure.
And I know everyone's very happy that as a part of the master plan, there will be a statue of President Stevens on campus
that
as well.
Correct.
So we have our historic core that everybody wants to protect and maintain, and you've created this lovely phrase to describe the buildings. And that is essentially where the academics and the core will continue to take place. What other areas are we talking about? You mentioned something called the University Common. Mm-hmm. I don't know that everyone's as familiar with that phrase or why it was chosen.
Yeah. Well, I think to begin with, the historic campus is our vision is to continue to perpetuate creating great place, taking the quadrangle, beautifying it, and creating more quadrangles, making it more walkable, making it more bikeable, perhaps making it a little less auto-friendly. You know, Dr. Savoy said initially to clear up the edges, and we're doing that. We're beautifying the edges and moving parking to its proper place. The historic quad or historic campus is going to be relegated primarily to undergraduate studies. As the university matures and grows over the next 20 years, we envision the graduate programs migrating north through the Lourdes property if we acquire it. If not, we have alternative schemes to bring us around to Blackham Coliseum, where the graduate programs would be positioned, both in engineering and medical sciences. From that particular location, again, moving north to where the athletic complex is, we envision creating not necessarily a research park, but a research village. And I mean village in true spirit of what a village is, mixed use, living, retail, arts, performance space, and of course research. And we've structured that entire 500 plus acres around that kind of a dynamic. Now what's interesting is when we have conversations about this, people say, well, you're dreaming again. Well, I will tell you that we've already had our second meeting to begin the process to put this out for a national solicitation of interested developers to come in and assist us in realizing that vision. And we hope to do that within the next 16 weeks. So it's happening pretty quickly.
Are there other campuses around the country that have done that, essentially separated their undergraduate and graduate programs?
Yeah. You know, actually, in most universities, because the land masses are limited for the most part, universities have been forced to spread themselves out. One of the difficulties we've had with the comprehensive plan for the university is that people view the University Common and the academic campus as two totally different worlds. Our goal is to link them together. And we created at least a philosophical connector that we call the Path of Knowledge that will be an umbilical greenbelt that links all of these properties together for us to be able to traverse and be able to move from one side to the other. But again, the University Common has been over the last 30 years considered, you know, the northern sector of the campus. It doesn't really relate one to the other.
So even though the graduate programs and students would kind of be moved towards that village, mm-hmm. that academic
yeah.
village,
yeah.
you're hoping that it will be even more closely connected yeah. with this master plan.
The goal will be that physically it would be more connected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we visited at about six, going back to your original question, we visited about six campuses nationwide that have done research villages, which is the new kind of buzzword. And the one that was the most interesting to us was a campus in North Carolina called Centennial Park. And they are doing some just wonderful things there. And unfortunately for them, they did not realize that it was going to be difficult to connect the bicycle and pedestrian ways. And consequently, it is still disconnected. So our goal was never to have that happen. But we wanted to take the best ideas from them and bring it back to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that plan for connecting the two, because that's very integral. You didn't want that to fall by the wayside.
No.
And, of course, speaking with Tom Sammons last week, we talked somewhat about that bike path that mm-hmm. they've been working on for a number of years now.
Right.
Describe that connection that mm-hmm. you're envisioning.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Tom and them did some phenomenal work connecting the University Common. You know, that was a grant that they had received, and they brought it to the Johnston Street corridor. That was done prior to our work. When we started to work on our concept, the Lourdes piece was heavily leveraged in the conceptualization of what we were doing. So we started to look at taking St. Landry as a new corridor for the university, because Lourdes is no longer there. That corridor is going to become something very different. We wanted to link the University Common through the St. Landry corridor to St. Mary and all the way to the university. We've done that not only with regard to the automobile, but now we have bikeways. We negotiated with the city to have the city begin work in the next couple of weeks in reinventing St. Mary into a two-lane corridor that will engage bicyclists and pedestrians. And the very visionary piece was to incorporate what we hope one day will be a tram that will take students from the University Common all the way through to the academic campus, through the potential of Lourdes and or the St. Landry, St. Mary corridor.
Describe what you mean by tram. Some people might think
yeah.
of the New Orleans streetcars or something.
Well, you know, the tram thing came up. Actually, some students at the Charette were bringing up this very visual idea of what a couple of universities have done, an overhead, essentially, tram that would be independent of city utilities, city rights-of-way. My initial concern was that the cost would just be, you know, overwhelming. But after we began to look at what rights-of-way existed, where we wouldn't have to acquire rights-of-way, that possibility is real. There are some pieces that need to be put into play. The city is currently working with the university today to look at doing transit in lieu of the bus system we currently use, doing state-of-the-art CNG buses. Hopefully that comes to pass. And if it does, it paves the way for what future tram might be, mm-hmm. you know, so that's mm-hmm. very exciting.
Hmm. And I do want to remind people that you can find out more as we're talking and you'd like to find out more at the university's website. There is a link to the master plan.
That's
and
correct.
You can find all of the sketches and the wonderful descriptions of
yep.
this master plan. I'd like to remind people in our audience, my guest is Steve Oop with Architects Southwest, who has been very instrumental in the university's master plan, which has developed over the past 3 years, but as we've been saying, really there's been planning yeah. going on since the very beginning here on this campus.
Absolutely.
And really you're bringing this back to some of the original vision of the President Stevens at that time, who really thought about it as a village and had this wonderful cohesive
right.
style. So there's going to be the commons, which will have a lot of activity. There will be living quarters. And again, this is visionary right now, but so much is already going forward. And and you would have this somehow connected through bikeways, pedestrian ways, maybe a tram later on. Let's come back to the main part of campus, because that does interest people a lot, because that's, I mean, when parents are thinking about where to send their students and when kids are thinking about going to college, that's what they think about. Describe the campus itself. And you've talked about new quadrangles. You've talked about new bike pathways. Give us a sense of what it will look like. What can people expect, say, in 5 years when a student will come to campus for orientation?
Oh, how exciting. It is already taking shape. The goal will be to create a 24-hour life. Now, to do that, we need housing. We have 2,100 brand-new housing units built and operational. Within the next 5 years, you're going to have 5,000 housing units. The current housing units cater to the freshman and sophomore classes. Future housing will cater to the upperclassmen and married students. The goal will be to reposition the married student housing in a more village-like setting as opposed to a garden apartment type that currently exists. And the reinvention of the student union, which is underway as we speak, the union is going to be built around the town hall concept, where all activities will emanate from the union, which was originally intended but kind of missed the mark for various reasons. Again, following Dr. Savoy's wishes, we removed all of the parking from the frontage of these buildings, and the new union is now pulled up to the tree line. Boucher Street has been reinvented into a main street, a promenade, if you will, with cafes, post office, offices, SGA offices.
Now remind us where Boucher Street is.
Boucher, when I was in school, was kind of the service corridor for the old union. It's the street that runs from Hebrar to McKinley, one block off University. And initially it really was services. It will now become a main street, tree lined, 12-foot sidewalks across the street from the brand new housing. We've maintained Buchanan Hall, which was something that was in disrepair, has been renovated now.
A beautiful old building.
It's absolutely stunning. Again, Dr. Savoy's directive is to create history and to maintain the historical fabric. We've gone a few steps further. Buchanan used to be tucked behind Guillory Hall, which was kind of the old bowling alley, right? We're taking Guillory Hall down, and Buchanan will now front a new square that fronts the lake. Hebrard Boulevard is going to be reconfigured, and we're tearing down two of the more modernist buildings, McCullough. No, what are those two buildings? I never can remember the names of them.
I think they're just sometimes called those ugly buildings.
Well, Dr. Savoy was not a big fan of them, so they're coming down, actually. And we're going to create essentially a new promenade from Moody Hall to the lake. And so now as you drive down Hebrard, you'll be able to experience the lake.
The lake edge will be of the showcased, lake. Won't it?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And the Walk of Honor, we're taking it out of the quad now. It stays there, but we're doing the first 100 years in the quad. We need to move it to grow the
lots
walk.
Lots of classes.
Yeah, now we're moving on to Hebrard. So Hebrard now will become the new, the promenade of 2004 or 3 on if we do another 100 years. So that's taking place. And then, celebrating the whole notion of the historic quad where there were covered walkways, we've created this series of covered pedestrian promenades that will link students now from the quad all the way to Lewis Street. We've mandated in the code that any new building built on a Class A promenade will be mandated to build covered walks so that they can be perpetuated over time. Those kinds of things are all in play as we speak. The students assessed themselves last spring, and we're beginning to build those things as we speak.
Right now, I guess the union has been assessed for quite a while.
That's been in the mill for quite a while.
For a long time. But they did vote to help to fund this master plan.
Yes, they did.
They did.
That is correct.
Well, when you're talking about walks, people do get excited because obviously it rains here a lot. That will help around campus, people dashing from classes. And you're talking about a lot of pedestrian boulevards. And how How forbidden will cars be on campus? And that's a question in a lot of people's minds.
You know, they're not forbidden. Mm-hmm. We like to say we're making them behave.
that's a good word.
Relegating them to at least being equal to the human being as opposed to being superior to the mm-hmm. human being. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that strategy involves just simply creating structured parking decks that would be peripheral to the campus. Set up in such a way. You know, one of the things about Southerners is they will walk about 5 minutes. If they have to walk 10 minutes, they'll drive. So psychologically, we try and position these parking strategies in a 5 minute walk zone. And so we're beginning to do that. One of the projects that we're working on as we speak is a new parking deck on Lewis Street, which will essentially download all the parking on Rex. Creating, again, the connector for the bicycle ways and creating bigger sidewalks and taking a lot of the on-street parking that occurs today and taking it and putting it behind the scenes, if you will.
Mm-hmm. How many stories will that parking tower be?
That parking deck is kind of a misleading. Stories isn't really – it's the same scale as Rougeau Hall. Mm-hmm. Keep it in context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're not planning to put skyscrapers of parking towers on campus.
And you won't see the deck. It'll be behind a liner that there's a liner building being built that will be part of the engineering department. A testing lab will be built as the frontage building, so it's context. And you actually enter behind the scenes to park. And once you're parked, you're behind, you know, no one sees you.
Mm-hmm. Now, in describing some of the buildings that are going up now and perhaps future buildings, are they going to retain the style that you mentioned, the Creole, Georgian?
You know, that's been the most difficult thing of all of this. Mm-hmm. There is a debate amongst the architecture profession and the public about what is appropriate. The truth is that, you know, the goal will be to create a context that still is within keeping with the old campus. But it's difficult to do justice to great historic buildings with the budgets that we have. And consequently, we end up with buildings that are not necessarily as beautiful as the old buildings, and they in some ways do disrespect to them. So the new code essentially says that you will use the same brick. You will use obviously we've got new materials to deal with. Glass, roofing materials have all evolved tremendously. So the goal will be to allow us to use new materials in a different way but still be contextual, which is a difficult thing to do.
And so give us an example of how you can be contextual with these new materials and new designs. I mean, they have been done beautifully on campus.
They have.
Describe how that might happen.
Well, you know, Oliver Hall is a new building that was built, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and people love that building. And so it isn't even Georgian. It is much more modern. But it has a context. It has a form. It has the window sizes are you know, complementary. The roof pitches are complementary, but it's still very much of its time. Mm-hmm. The new student union, again, is very similar to that. I mean, you'll have to see it, wait and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But the context is primarily driven by the form of the buildings, the scale and materiality of it.
So you're being paying an homage to the old historic buildings, but at the same time allowing for creativity and freedom and the ability to really do what you're trying to do rather than be stuck in the past.
That is correct. Now, we do have a czar that oversees all of this. Mm-hmm. His name is Dr. Joseph Savoy. So ultimately, he is a dictator and will accept or deny mm-hmm. whatever the proposals are.
Mm-hmm. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Master Plan. Steve Oob with Architects Southwest has been very instrumental in putting this plan together, putting together charrettes through the past several years. And in addition to dealing with people on campus, I'm sure a large part of it has been interacting with the town, part of the town and gown. And because obviously we're right in the middle of a very vibrant, thriving community. How did that work? How much did you talk with city officials and people in town about these new ideas?
By the way, I compliment you on pronouncing it charrette, which is really a great thing. That's we've come a long
way. That's
the
Cajun pronunciation.
That's exactly right. You know, when we did the public charrette, which was the third in the series, it was intended to engage the immediate community primarily. Over the course of the last 30 or 40 years, again, the automobile has put some significant pressure not only on the campus but on the fabric of neighborhoods that surround the campus. And it's an observation of most people in the community that the value of real estate around the campus has diminished significantly. And it is due in part to the pressure of the automobile parking, student rentals, things of that nature. And so when we met with the adjacent neighborhoods, it was primarily to discuss with them their desires and their concerns. And generally speaking, most people supported the idea or the notion of decanting the parking. And by building proper parking on campus, we'll be able to do that. There, Elmhurst Park, which is a neighborhood directly outside of the campus, in the 70s, 60s and 70s, suffered greatly from this pressure and took it into their own hands to remedy the situation. And they've done a phenomenal job. And that's some of the highest priced real estate in the city today. So our goal was to try and understand the pressures, minimize them, and celebrate the advantages that the university brings to those neighborhoods in various ways. And so we're beginning to do that as part of the city's comprehensive plan. So the hand-in-glove concept of university planning, city planning are coming together there.
Right. And I think many people have had the experience of traveling in other cities and seeing beautiful campuses,
yes.
Rice and others, where the neighborhoods are gorgeous,
yes,
around
absolutely.
Them. And there's a wonderful interaction between the campus and the community.
Right. What we discovered in the process was the city has such a great working relationship with the university that they have purposely not pressured the university to move parking out of the neighborhood. They've lived with it. I think now you're going to see that the university is willing to park the students on campus now that they can provide it. The city will begin managing the neighborhoods a little bit more properly.
Mm-hmm. So really, this master plan is playing very well with the Lafayette Comprehensive Plan as well.
It's amazing.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, what's interesting is, one of the things we realized that the edges of the campus, again, I go back to the automobile, mm-hmm. have become the highest and best use, and it's parking. So, student parking across the street from the academic campus is in high demand. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because of that, what you're seeing is the edge fabric is depleted now into aggregate parking lots that are rented on a semester basis. The goal will be to create a new, higher, and better use. And the city's comprehensive plan is beginning to address that. We're looking at creating buildings that are contextual, residential, retail, directly across the street from the university. Can you imagine now being able to wake up at 10 minutes to 8 for an 8 o'clock class? That would be pretty nice, wouldn't it?
So when you talk about developing, I guess that goes into another area. The university is not in the business of creating businesses. How do you develop that? How do you create that village that you're talking about and, the retailers that are in some of these wonderful sketches that you have?
You know, what's interesting is they figure it out themselves. It's very easy when you have 15 to 18,000 people day in and day out visiting anything, whether it's a campus or a downtown. It generates business, and the business people understand this, and they're beginning already. We've had probably a half dozen meetings in the last just 2 months with investors who are looking at trying to transform the areas of the campus that we have forecasted to be transformed.
So if you you talked earlier about how UL really had become a commuter campus. Mm-hmm. So if you keep all of those students on campus and you have these villages, the businesses will search out these populations.
Probably the most aggressive rendering that we did was the conversion of St. Mary Boulevard and Johnston Street. Where we currently have a Burger King and a Taco Bell. You know, what was interesting is during the charrette, we were videoing the students crossing that corridor, and the analogy was made that the students look like gazelles crossing the Amazon because the automobiles were ready to just take them out. But it became obvious to us that that corridor is going to become something very different in short order. And so we visualized the McDonald's or the Burger King becoming a three-story live-work where they would occupy the first floor and there was living above. And the same thing was true for Taco Bell. And so we'll see where that goes. That's our future.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, what part Architect Southwest, your work, how does your firm and the architectural effort, how does that continue into the future with this plan, this master plan? Give us a sense of the time frame and how you'll be involved.
Okay. Well, you know, the plan was, and again, I mentioned earlier that in order for this to become a reality, there needs to be regulations that mandate this to happen. Those regulations have been adopted, and they are now a requirement for anyone doing business at this university. Our goal is to get this out into the public, and we are on board as a member of the planning committee so that any project that comes through the campus, we help review. That's the first step. The second step will be that any changes that will evolve, this is not a static plan. It is very dynamic. And as changes present themselves, the document can be amended. Our role will be to amend that document. We have a one-year contract to review the process. And then once that's done, we work with the University Campus Planning Committee. They will take it under their wing and hopefully take it forward.
All right. So let's kind of remind people what's in the works right now. The union is being built. Housing has it's already going forward. Are there new housing units? You mentioned several sort of academic villages. And what will happen on campus? What will be built as far as housing?
The next step will be to everyone's familiar with Stokes. Those will be taken down. And the next play of housing will be positioned to the west, southwest of Lewis Street, which is where the married student housing is. The goal will be, you know, the university just did a land swap with the Horse Farm. We acquired Youth Park. Youth Park is what we're recommending to be the receiver site for the future married student housing. Once that's done, then we will remove the existing married student housing and replace it with kind of urban living, the new housing type for upper graduate juniors and seniors. And so that's where the next positioning of housing will go. Those studies are already underway. So that's moving much quicker than we all thought.
Now, a question I think is that may be in some people's minds, how do you convince juniors and seniors to stay on campus?
Well, you know, if it's right now, the housing throughout the city is where they're going, right? And they're going there because there's something that is being offered to them. When we can offer that and more, then we will be the recipient of that popular kind of housing type. And that's what we're building. Mm-hmm. We're building what they want to live in. Today, students no longer want to live in dorms, right? I mean, that hasn't been the reality for quite a while. We just haven't kept up with the time. Now it's time to begin doing that. And we know how to do it.
So lots of great housing plans in order here on campus. The union will be finished in a couple years. What will happen, I think you mentioned a couple dates, but with the St. Mary Corridor? I think a lot of people are thinking about that because we've all, you know, zoomed through campus. When will that start happening?
Well, we have a contract with the city of Lafayette. The student referendum allowed them to assess themselves to create the bike path. We're taking some of the funds, and we're transferring them through a cooperative endeavor with the city to convert St. Mary from St. Landry to the north all the way down to Taft on the south. We're going to convert the corridor to a two-way for automobiles and to a two-way bike path, which is going to be pretty substantial, with a planted buffer separating the vehicles from the bicycle ways.
I think some people were a little confused about that, thinking that maybe there would just be, like on Johnston Street, you know, a bike path on either side of the cars, but the cars will actually be separated.
Absolutely separate. Mm-hmm. We envision that the bicycle way will carry way more traffic than the vehicles. Because you see, when Lourdes was moved, St. Landry, St. Mary, and all of those corridors have been downloaded significantly. So it's a very different world here, and we want to take advantage of it while it is convert it to a pedestrian, bicycle-friendly campus. Mm-hmm. And that's happening now.
It is. I mean, Vic, there aren't enough bike racks.
Yeah.
No, is that in the plan?
It is. This is so interesting because, you know, when we did our preference survey, we were walking the campus and there were some very interesting things that surfaced. For instance, bicycles chained to the exit stairs so that you couldn't exit buildings. That's all been corrected now. We're actually building shelter at key locations that not only are they shelter, but there's vending machines for bicycle tires and tools, air, water, communications, shade. And we're building these in various locations where bicyclists will now be able to exit the bicycle way, walk their bike to the station and lock their bikes, some in lockers that can be kept overnight. And so it's very interesting how many of these things have surfaced as a result of the input mm-hmm. that we got from the students.
Mm-hmm. So how many of these stations are you envisioning and where will they be?
That's a complicated answer, but there's five types. Okay, there's a typical just parking station, which is a rack, but it's on a brick paved section. We've located those at very convenient points to classrooms. And then we have at every parking deck, we have lockers so that students who commute into campus can keep a bike in a locker, park their car, get their bike, go to class, and come back and put their bike in the locker. We have those not only in the deck on Taft and McKinley and on McKinley, the new deck, but also the Cajun Field site. And then we have the very formal stations that have air and all of the vending machines mm-hmm. and lockers, as a matter of fact, for your personal items. We have one located at the new Student Union and one at Cajun Field, and then one will be placed at the new Merritt Student Housing location when that's built.
Mm-hmm. And maybe a 24-hour bike mechanic on call.
Well, that might be a viable business.
Well, I know you're making so many students happy with that. All of the students that we interact with here at KRVS all ride bikes on campus, yeah. And it's just become a phenomena.
It has.
Obviously, the master plan has really taken that to heart as well. If you are just tuning in, my guest Steve Oob with Architect Southwest has been very much a part of the UL Lafayette master plan that has been accepted by all parties, and it's all go right now. There obviously is a timeline, and as you said, it's not static. It's a very dynamic plan, and as things happen, you'll see how it actually works in the real world. So people can go to the UL website and find the master plan. They can download it. They can take a look at it, see some of the renderings, and also see some very detailed plans about all the way down to the plumbing.
That's correct.
That you have there. Well, Steve, you came to college here at UL, mm-hmm. didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Just thinking back to what it was like back then, and we had a good time back then too. You know, what are your thoughts about? I guess the changing needs of students and faculty. Yeah. Is it really that great? And will their experience be much more optimal than students in generations past?
Yeah, you know, in many ways, actually. We're bringing back – when I came here in 70. McNaspy Stadium was still on campus. I talked to people who were here prior to me arriving, and most people talk of the soul of the campus because people lived on the – it was one place at the time. Over the course of that period from 1970 to today, the campus has really – in many ways, taken a downward turn in so far as having a life to it. And so the goal, because of the input we got from the alumni as well as the new students, was to recreate that soul. And from the very beginning, our goal was to figure out what it would take to do that. And it's that 24-hour life. And that's what our focus has been. And it hasn't really been that difficult because, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, normally when you do things for people, they don't understand what you're doing. It's more difficult. People get it, you know, and it's almost a demand now. Right. And so it's made our jobs pretty easy.
Right. And it's really nice for you to bring it back into that historical context of at many times during our history, it has been a village.
Yeah,
it has. People have been extremely close. And yes, we kind of got lost somewhere there.
We have. But we're back on track.
We're recreating that wonderful village that is the University of Louisiana at Lafayette.
Absolutely.
Steve, thank you so much for all your work. And I know everybody who's worked on it over the years and everybody who gave input. We look forward to seeing it unfold. And again, information everywhere about the master plan.
Yes.
Check on the website. And of course, if you have any questions, lots of people to contact as well.
Thank you, Judith.
Thank you, Steve.